kind of you, Brother Theo, to come all the way here to share this Dharma knowledge with us. And tonight's topic is Satipatthana Sutta Part 1. Before Brother Theo takes over the mic, the sutta itself, I think the name we'll be able to understand. It talks about the foundation of mindfulness. Mindfulness, a factor that is mentioned 5 times of the 37 factors of enlightenment. And that 37 factors of enlightenment, we know that we need to cultivate in order to attain enlightenment. So sati, you can say that is an important factor, an important quality of mind, without which we cannot progress much in even in our worldly achievement as well as spiritual achievement. So anyway, sati is when it is developed and we practice it well, it is just like a friend who is always near to us, next to us, ever guarding us. Now, before Brother Theo takes over the mic, just one announcement is that the NDC here is going to reprint this CD, which is Satipatthana Sutta, chanted by the Venerable Omar P. Sobita Thero. This was produced, I think, a couple of years back, and the quantity has run out. So Reverend Sada would like to have 2,000 copies of this CD. Total cost is 1,360 ringgit. For those who would like to participate in this Dharma Dana, please let me know or let Sister Fu know if you wish to contribute towards the cost of this production. And it has been, I believe it has been very well accepted, especially when the quantity of this was sent over to Sri Lanka. Okay, so please take note if you would like to participate in this wholesome deed. All right, now, and Brother Theo shall lead us in the puja. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother Theo, for the kind introduction. We will now commence our pre-puja. Compose your mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then together we will start the puja. We will pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and the Triple Gem before we start. We will just chant Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikapadang samadhiyami Suramiraya macapamadatana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. You can be seated. Then we shall commence tonight's Dhamma sharing. Huh? The topic for tonight's talk is Satipatthana Sutta. You have requested two sessions, so we call the first session part one. Then there will be another session 2 weeks from now, which is a continuation. So today I will try to finish off the theory part. Then you can ask question, related question, so that you understand better. Then the second session, we will try to do some meditation. Then you go back and develop clearer understanding of what sutta is. So just like what Brother Tay has introduced to you all, this particular quality of mind that the Buddha calls sati, mindfulness, is very, very important if you want to develop the cultivation well. Sati is the most important mind state or mind development that living being need to develop. Without sati, there is no cultivation. Because the Buddha make it very clear. In the Satipatthana Sutta, he said, you have to develop the training of sati by anchoring your mindfulness on this four foundation, nothing else. If you develop sati and anchor it on something else, then it is not Satipatthana. But you can become very good in whatever you do too. Just like people who are very skillful in developing the games, they become very mindful towards the end. Then those who can develop Qigong or Tai Chi or those things, they are very graceful, even yoga. They have mindfulness. But it is not geared towards development of wisdom. With reference to the four foundations. These four foundations are very vital to develop understanding of the teaching and to develop wisdom, to insight into the reality, into the characteristics of nature. So Satipatthana Sutta explains very clearly why sati is so important. And the Buddha said this cultivation, he even told the monk at that time, I will read to you the introduction so that you can understand. So this sutta on the four foundations of mindfulness in Pali is called Satipatthana. Or in Thai, I think they call it Satipatthan. So this sutta starts with explaining to you clearly how the Buddha actually expounded this sutta. And it showed it to you clearly, the emphasis behind. And later on, you developed clearer understanding of this sutta. Then you can relate and connect back to all the essential Dhammapada verse or verses that the Buddha constantly mentioned to understand the importance of heedfulness. And heedfulness requires sati, mindfulness. Because without sati, you can never be heedful. To be heedful, like what we defined earlier on, I think, at our last talk, I still haven't wrapped off the detail. Look at the whiteboard. Heedfulness equals to what? What is this one? You have to be ever mindful. That is the first part. If you haven't developed mindfulness, how can you stabilize it to be ever mindful? And if you are not ever mindful, you cannot use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So this Noble Eightfold Path, you have to cultivate it in daily life, because it's only in daily life that the Noble Eightfold Path can be applied. If you look at the whole of Noble Eightfold Path, it constitutes 8 path factors, and they are all interconnected, and they are all related to life. The first path factor is right view, samadhi. You don't have right view with regards to laws that governs life and existence, you don't know how to live. So that's why you need to establish the first path factor. The Buddha put it number one. You must have right understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence. Or right view with regards to the essential truth that governs life and existence. And the three most important truth, the Buddha already explained them. The first one is law of karma, is it? Karma niyama. The first right view, the first nature's law that governs life and existence. You must have right view with regards to this law. And in the subsequent essential Dhamma, he emphasized a lot on what you need to develop to understand this law, to have this right view. 5 daily contemplation, the last one, the Buddha advised all the bhikkhus and cultivators to reflect every day so that you get this right understanding clearly developed within your own cultivation. The Buddha reflected and contemplated after his enlightenment and came to realize this very powerful truth. This law of karma is very, very powerful, is it? Because according to the Buddha, you have to reflect every day. Each and every one of us, not only human beings, including all living beings, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So when you develop this understanding, then you know how to pay attention to karma. That's how the advice of the Buddha comes about. In order to take care of karma, you have to take care of whatever thing that you arise through your daily life. All of your actions, speech and thought process, you have to take care. So you have to develop mindfulness, heedfulness, to be aware of your mental intention behind everything you do. Then it will lead you to the understanding of how to cultivate according to the advice of the Buddha. To take care of karma, the Buddha said you have to avoid all evil. Not only avoid evil, all evil. Then you have to cultivate wholesomeness, so that you develop the wholesomeness of karma, so that you can reap the effect of that wholesome karma or action. Then you have to, lastly, purify your mind to develop the wisdom, so that even though you have all the merits and blessings, but when you confront the first noble truth reality, without wisdom, suffering will still arise, you will still be afflicted. So karma alone not enough, the Buddha said. You must purify your mind to develop wisdom. That's how you start. So the first power factor is already so important. And when you get that understanding, you will know the importance of the second, third, fourth, and fifth power factor, which is right view leading to right thought, and right speech, right action, and right livelihood. then arise the appropriate right effort, the fourth type of right effort, to constantly purify your thought, your action, your speech, and your thought process. So all this, they are all interrelated to the first power factor. So when you have right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, and right effort to cultivate all this, means you not only avoid all evil, you cultivate goodness and wholesomeness. Then the last two power factors, right mindfulness and samadhi, they are part of the five spiritual faculty. And that will allow you to see things as they are. If you have your sati and mindfulness, your mind is very different. When you are in sati, you are just aware without thought. Then with samadhi, there is stability of mind, collectedness, unwavering mind. Then at the moment of sense experience, your mind has clarity. It can see things as they are. That's why you can understand the truth, the reality. You can develop wisdom. So with that, the whole of Noble Eightfold Path can lead to enlightenment. Yeah. So heedfulness is very important. You need mindfulness. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then only you can use it to cultivate. And within the Noble Eightfold Path, what I need to tell you is the seventh power factor is right mindfulness. And the fourth foundation of mindfulness is just one of the power factor. Understand? Which means the real meditation is not only satipatthana or satipatthana. Satipatthana only one of the power factor. That's why you need the rest to complete it. But satipatthana is already very powerful. If you finish satipatthana, you would have finished the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path too. Because within the four foundation of mindfulness, the last foundation of mindfulness, Dhammanupassana, there are five categories of cultivation. You can recall what are they? Yeah? What are the five categories of cultivation within the fourth foundation, Dhammanupassana? First one is what? Mindfulness of what? Yes, the five hindrances. Second one is what? Mindfulness of? The five aggregates of form and mind. These are all the essential Dhamma. Then after that, mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases. To understand how you function as a human being and to trace the origination factor of all the mental states or emotion, like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, how they arise, through what, and what are the conditions behind. Then only you can retrospectively reverse them to develop the wisdom. Yeah. Then the fourth category of cultivation within the last foundation of Dhammanupassana is the seven factors of enlightenment. Because by the time you hit the sixth sense basis cultivation, you would have developed a lot of understanding and wisdom. Then the seven factors of enlightenment keep on arising. Mm. Then after that, you can move on to the last category of practice or cultivation. The Buddha call it mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths. That's why within the Four Noble Truths, you have what they call the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the Fourth Noble Truth. And the funny thing about this Noble Eightfold Path is, within this Noble Eightfold Path, there is also the Four Noble Truths. That's why they are all related. You know, where does it arise? Which power factor the Four Noble Truths fall? Of course, seven power factor is one of them. Eh? Just now we already know that. But where else? Which other power factor? The first power factor, remember? The first right view is law of karma. Second right view is what? After karma niyama is what? Chitta niyama. Chitta niyama means the order of the mind, how your mind functions. That one, the Buddha talked about dependent origination, paticca samuppada, or the dwelling, or itta paccayata, the other Pali term. Then the last one is what? Dhamma niyama. Understand? Dhamma niyama is all of Dhamma. And all of Dhamma spin off from what? The Four Noble Truths. That's why the third right view is having the right view with regards to this Four Noble Truths. And what are these Four Noble Truths? I already explained many times. What is it? It is the essence of the... Essence of what? The Buddha's teaching, isn't it? Clear now, everything that he teaches spin off from there. And I also told you what? The Four Noble Truths is like the secret of life, understand not? Because it explained to you clearly all of life, mundane and supramundane. That's why when you understand this Four Noble Truths, you understand life. You know how to live. Then you would have developed the enlightenment. Because you would have understood what suffering is, the cause behind all suffering, and how suffering can cease, and how Nibbana can be realized. Then you will also have understood the Fourth Noble Truth, which is the path that leads to all, the ending of suffering, or cessation of all suffering, namely, the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. So they are all interconnected, interlinked. That's how I want you to understand that this four foundation of mindfulness, although it's only one aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path factor, which is the seven power factor of Samasati. But within the Samasati, if you finish the cultivation, it also covers the whole of the Four Noble Truth cultivation. Yeah. That's why the first right view, Samaditti, initially you may not understand the Four Noble Truth in its clear perspective or entirety. But as you develop the cultivation, that's why it all connected, lead from one to another. That brings to mind one more sutta that the Buddha talked about. Actually, during the time of the Buddha, they liked this sutta. He spoke on the seven stages of purification. You have to purify your mind in stages, he said. First is, they call it Satta Visuddhi. Satta is seven. Visuddhi is purification. First purification is what? You have to purify what? They call it Sila Visuddhi. What is Sila? Sila is not action. Sila is morality. Morality. Of course, your action become karma. So, Sila is morality. You have to purify your moral code. Understand? That's why Sila Visuddhi is purification of your morality. Means you must have right view with regards to the law of karma so that you don't violate this law. Then you know how to purify that virtue so that you really worthy to be the disciple of the Buddha. If you call yourself the disciple of the Buddha, means what? At least you must be worthy of him in there. To be worthy of him means what? You must at least heed his advice to avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. So, to avoid all evil, you have to keep your precept. To do good, you have to develop the ennobler of the precept. So all these are interconnected and related. That's why Sila Visuddhi is very important. Then after you are able to purify this so-called morality aspect, means the precept, because you chant, I undertake the training rule to abstain from all this. That's why you have to be ever mindful. That training rule is to develop mindfulness so that you don't violate this precept, so that you don't kill and cause harm to fellow living beings. So that you don't steal and partake things that don't belong to you. You don't deceive others. Then you don't commit sexual misconduct and all those things. Then you don't lie. You don't arise the unnecessary wrong speeches and all those things. Then you don't partake intoxicant drugs and all those things that can make your consciousness very low. So this is the first purification. Not until you develop your sila, you cannot move to the next one. That's why there is this category of essential Dhamma, the Buddha said. Meditation starts with sila, samadhi, and panya, remember? Samadhi is mental cultivation. That's why mental cultivation leads us to the second purification. From sila visuddhi, you go to citta visuddhi, purification of consciousness, mind. So you need to look at the mental states. They are also related to the four foundations of mindfulness. Then when you start to develop this understanding, when you have purified your mind state, then you will come to understand that a lot of things that happen to the living being, your suffering, they come from your wrong view, your self-delusion. All of your conditioning that make you deluded. And from there, you get yourself entangled. You grasp and cling onto the five aggregate of form and mind without understanding. So that's why the third purification is ditti visuddhi. And ditti is view. That's why you have to straighten your view. You have to purify your views. Cultivation of the mind like that. Before you develop the right understanding and the wisdom, you cannot purify your views. Your wrong view condition you to become like that. That's why in your cultivation, the moment you understand, you have to straighten your view. And straightening one's view is a very powerful meritorious action. Yeah. It leads to a lot of wholesomeness. Yeah. Then the rest of the purification, they are all connected. Stage by stage you go. That's why in that sutta he said, I think the disciple of the Buddha, Sariputta, and another venerable, they were discussing this thing after they met the Buddha. Then Sariputta knew this monk was very good. So he wanted to have a discussion with this monk. He said, the whole of the holy life, what is the meaning of this holy life to you? Then he started with the first purification. Is it just to cultivate this sila visuddhi? He said, no. Then he talked about the second purification. Again, that monk said no. The third purification. Again, he said no. Until the seventh, no. Then most people would be confused. Eh? The seven stages of purification that lead to enlightenment. All the seven also not part of the holy life. So people cannot understand. But Sariputta understand. And this monk understand. Because after he have a discussion with Sakyamuni, he come to understand that they are all together, like the Noble Eightfold Path, an integral path. You cannot leave out any. So if you don't go through them in stages, you cannot develop the enlightenment. That is the gist of it. So in that particular sutta, that monk who actually answered Sariputta, he explained, is it? It's just like the king, is it? That time I forgot which king already, is it? Let's say, after he has gone somewhere, then he realized there is an urgent thing that he has to do somewhere. And this place is very far. Then he knew he need to reach back that place to take charge within the fastest possible way through whatever resources he have. Then because there are seven destinations that he has to pass by, and that is like the shortest route. Then that venerable say, let's say the king is very wise, then he will command them, he say, get ready seven horses, like relay, understand? Because the horses, as you run, they become very tired, they cannot continue. So he said, the first one will run the first stretch. Then reach there, it will change over to the second one, third one, four, five, five, six, and seven. He said, likewise, if the question is asked, how does the king reach his destination and able to resolve all his problem? You cannot say it's because he ride the first chariot, or he ride the second chariot. or he write the third, fourth, fifth, or sixth, or seventh chariot. He has to write all the seven. Understand? So that's why this Satta Visuddhi or seven stages of purification, it is interconnected and interrelated. So this is another very important aspect that I want to let you have an understanding before we continue into the topic proper. Yeah. So now you have this understanding. Now I'll read to you the Satipatthana Sutta, then you will understand. The Buddha mentioned, he said, "Thus have I heard." This is according to Ananda. At one time, he said, the Blessed One was living in Kurus at Kamasadama, a market town of the Kuru people. Then the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhu as follows. You listen. This one is very important. This one is about this sutta. The Buddha said, "O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for reaching the right path, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness." See? The Buddha make it very clear. Ekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu. Eka is one. So he said, "Oh bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being." That's why without mindfulness on the four foundations, it's impossible to develop enlightenment. The enlightenment that the Buddha referred to, which is Nibbana, the end condition. So this particular understanding is most important than like I explained earlier on. This four foundation of mindfulness, even though it's only one small part of the Noble Eightfold Path Factor, the seventh path factor of Samasati, but because the last cultivation of Dhammanupassana also accumulate with the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why it is actually complete, stand alone. That's why it's only way. So Noble Eightfold Path is the real meditation. And this is just a very important subsector of the Noble Eightfold Path. But it will lead to the understanding of the whole of the Four Noble Truths. That's why it's very powerful. That's why the first sermon, when the Buddha became enlightened, he talked about the Four Noble Truths. He talked about the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. And because there are four truths, he turned it three times. 3 times 4 is 12. That is the 12 mode related. And the three turning of the Four Noble Truths that leads to the three type of corresponding wisdom are very important. First turning lead to Suttamaya Panya, the hearing of the truth. If you can develop wisdom through hearing the sutta or the discourse of the Buddha, then that is the first turning wisdom. They call it Suttamaya Panya. Panya or wisdom born of hearing the sutta. Then second turning is to reflect and contemplate and inquire deep into what the Buddha has proclaimed under the first turning. And that will stabilize whatever you have heard. Then you can assimilate them in and develop the second turning wisdom, which the Buddha called Chintamaya Panya. But these first two are not penetrative. Not until you hit the third turning. The third turning is Bhavana Maya Panya, means wisdom born of Bhavana. Bhavana is the meditative training, meditative discipline. So, whatever wisdom born of the cultivation of Bhavana, mental training, mental cultivation, through the sati, mindfulness, via the direct seeing, that one is very penetrative. That's why it's called wisdom born of Bhavana, which is the meditative training. And that one, the third turning, if you go through the sutta, you will come to understand every of that turning of the Four Noble Truths is referring to enlightenment. Like the First Noble Truth, the Buddha said, he only mentioned this in the third turning. This Noble Truth of suffering has already been understood. Remember, second turning is, the First Noble Truth, second turning, they say, this Noble Truth of suffering, which is the First Noble Truth of dukkha, is to be understood. Yeah. But when it comes to the third turning, this Noble Truth of dukkha has already been understood. Means what? You already enlightened, Karana. You have already understood what suffering is, what is the cause behind, and how it can cease, and what is the path that leads to the cessation and the end of all suffering. So the whole lot of Four Noble Truths has been understood. That's why it's about enlightenment. The third turning of the second Noble Truth is the same. The cause of craving, the cause of suffering, which is craving, has already been abandoned. Means you already abandoned it, means already rooted it out. Enlightenment in the here and the now has already been realized. So likewise, the third Noble Truth, third turning, this state of Nibbana, the cessation of all suffering, has already been realized. The moment you realize that, you already enlightened. Then the last Noble Truth, which is the fourth Noble Truth, the third turning, the Buddha mentioned the same. This Noble Eightfold Path, which is to be cultivated, has already been cultivated. Means what? Again, it's enlightened already. So all these are related. Okay? So, four foundation of mindfulness is a very essential integral of the Noble Eightfold Path. And the Noble Eightfold Path is a very important integral of the Four Noble Truths. And they are all connected in all the path factors. That's why they have to be together. It's not separate. Then now we go into this four foundation of mindfulness. The first foundation, the Buddha said, you must develop and establish mindfulness on the kaya. Kaya is the physical body or physical form. So kaya nupassana, mindfulness on the kaya. And within this foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha recommended six categories of cultivation. And you have to really, really develop the understanding of it and be very familiar with it. Otherwise, you cannot cultivate. You don't even know what they are. How can you develop the cultivation? The first category is what? Mindfulness of what? Very good. The rest of you don't seem to know. The first category within the first foundation, kaya nupassana, what must you develop mindfulness on? Which part of your body? Anapanasati, remember? That is the first category, mindfulness of in and out breath. That is to train your mind, to anchor your mind, so that you can stabilize that mindfulness. Then after you have developed that, the Buddha recommends you to move on to what? Mindfulness of the four posture. Then when you are able to do that, then you can develop the next category of cultivation, which is mindfulness of all the connecting activity between these four posture. That's why he says you develop sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action and all movement within the present moment. And when you develop all this, you will develop some form of wisdom, initial wisdom, to allow you to understand clearly the characteristics of nature, the universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering, state, and non-self. Then you are not deluded by all this. Then you will be able to actually see clearly that all form of craving, positive or negative, they lead to suffering. They lead to grief, sorrow, and lamentation. They are conditioned by delusion. So with that understanding, you will be able to develop the cultivation of these foundation of mindfulness called Kayanupassana. Now I read on the next very important paragraph. The Buddha said, the four foundations of mindfulness. What are the four? The Buddha said, here, bhikkhu. A bhikkhu lives contemplating. See, the word is contemplating. Understand not? With creative mind, silent, you reflect and you contemplate. Then you develop mindfulness on certain aspect of the four foundations. Then all the related important essential instruction now all here. You listen attentively. Yeah? The Buddha said, here, bhikkhu, a bhikkhu lives contemplating the body in the body. Ardent means very seriously, understand now. Then clearly comprehending. You must develop clear comprehension. You're not only mindful of the body in the body, but serious, ardent, very, very diligent. Then clearly comprehending and mindful. Then having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. That's why you have to develop this. That's why with the initial wisdom, you will have the ability to overcome covetousness and grief. What is covetousness? Desire, attachment, craving, clinging, grasping. This is covetousness because you desire, you want, you attach, you hold, you cling. And when you do that, it leads to suffering. That's why grief, sorrow and lamentation. So this foundation of mindfulness is to develop the mindfulness for you to see clearly all this Dhamma. So that when you understand their impermanent characteristic, their suffering characteristic, when you grasp and cling deludedly, when you hold, then you will understand that end of the understanding of the whole cultivation. Because they are impermanent and they lead to suffering, you grasp and cling. They are empty. They are non-self. They are not what you think. That's why your self-delusion, you will be able to break free. That's why you will not attach and cling to a egoic mind, an egoic self. And this is clearly stated in the Satipatthana Sutta. You cultivate and cultivate and cultivate and you cannot overcome covetousness and grief in this world, then you better check your cultivation. Like I told Brother Khan earlier on. Even when you are like working or trying to develop something, just now at my home. Let's say you try very hard to solve your problem. But after doing all those things, you realize you still don't get any result. You have not developed anything. You have not solved your problem. Means what? What you are doing is definitely not correct. Not in accordance. Otherwise, you would have solved your problem and come out of it. Like your career. Or how to become successful in life financially, let's say. You try everything, and yet you every time fail and doesn't meet success. Means you don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. You get yourself entangled. That's why you like very unlucky, very sorry. Yeah. Then you know you need to consult people or get advice or investigate into what happened. Your old way definitely doesn't work. So meditation is the same. If you cultivate and cultivate and cultivate year in, year out, go retreat, everything come out, then you realize when you are back into your daily life, you still got covetousness, craving, delusion, suffering, fear, worry, anxiety, grief and lamentation. Means you are not really progressing. Then you have to check your cultivation. That's why everything is about investigation. You have to investigate into everything that you do. You have to investigate into the Dhamma that the Buddha teach so that you develop the understanding. If you have developed the understanding and cultivate accordingly, you will definitely transform. You will definitely become more and more wise, more and more virtuous, more and more beautiful, character-wise, personality-wise, understanding-wise. If you are not getting orders, you have to check your cultivation. Understand or not? Means you have done it incorrectly. Otherwise, it will not lead to those mind states. You're supposed to train your mind to become more mindful, more heedful, so that you are more attentive, less thought, less suffering, less misery, less craving, less sorrow and lamentation and unhappiness, the like and dislike. So all this supposed to slowly, slowly get rooted out. But if your cultivation doesn't lead to this, it only brings about some form of calmness, stillness, beautiful mental state at times when you are in the right mood and right condition. That is not meditation. To me, that is just a skillful means to calm your mind down. If you cannot develop wisdom to understand who you are, what you are, and develop the wisdom to liberate this mind so that you will not get yourself deluded by what you see, what your senses come to perceive, so that this self-delusion is no more, so that you don't get yourself entangled with the phenomenal world and life anymore, so that you can stand above them. All this is meditation. Okay? So the first foundation is already very clear. Then the Buddha continues, is it? It's only after you have overcome in this world covetousness and greed, then you continue the fourth foundation of mindfulness, is it? He lives contemplating the feeling in feeling. This is the second foundation, Vedana Nupassana. Second foundation is about feeling. Feeling is very important because upon contact, feeling arises. When feeling arises, if the mind is deluded, is so conditioned, it will react. Understand not? Your reaction is due to your views and your opinion and your conditioning, because you got preference, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. So you attach to the pleasant, you reject the unpleasant. So all this, what they call duality, they will arise. And if you were to develop the investigative understanding, you come to realize that pleasant, unpleasant sense experience, they are related to the evil roots of greed and hatred, krana. They are also related to the first two hindrances within the five hindrances, sensual desire and ill will. So what the Buddha wants you to understand is, upon contact, feeling arises, then what happens? That's why in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha makes it very clear. You have to develop mindfulness, awareness. And when you are aware, when this feeling has shifted through your wrong view, through your conditioning, through your reaction of mind, and become pleasant and unpleasant feeling or neutral feeling, you must be aware, understand now? So that you are able to continue with the last foundation of mindfulness, Dhammanupassana, where the first category is about the five mental hindrances. So if it has become pleasant, then essential desire means the first hindrance arises already. And when this hindrance arises, it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state or inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So how can you meditate? You cannot meditate. You are trapped. Okay? That's why mindfulness of feeling is to be aware that it has moved. It has become hindered. It has become evil roots. That's why you have to arise the four right effort to actually abandon them or prevent them from arising. Then cultivate the wholesome thought that is still not in you, wholesome action and speech that is still not in you. Then to refine upon it. Then after that, you move on to the deeper cultivation. means no more right effort. We are right effort is to deal with the thought that has arisen. You come out with the five ways that the Buddha teach you to overcome unwholesome thought. You don't use effort anymore. The first way is to reflect, the Buddha said, on the opposite wholesome thought or wholesome speech and action so that it can help you overcome the unwholesome thought, action and speech. Like when you have a lot of anger, your mind can only do one thing at a time. So if you can contemplate and reflect on the opposite of anger, which is love. When you have love, there is no anger. That's why the unwholesome thought will be gone. You don't have to force yourself to abandon it or to prevent it from arising. It's true understanding, because when you have goodness, wholesomeness, there is no negativity. Then if that one doesn't help you in the long run, because finally it doesn't root out the defilement, it's only a skillful mean to make you more calm and more peaceful, to be at peace with the moment. But it has not been rooted out. That's why the Buddha moved on to the second way, he said. You must contemplate and reflect on the danger of allowing that unwholesome thought, unwholesome action and speech to continue to arise within your form and mind. Because that will lead to negative karma. It will make you evil. So the consequence of that is so serious, you were determined to abandon it. Then you can use the four right effort. Then later on, go to the third meditative training, which the Buddha recommends. This is the real meditation. He said, you just maintain awareness and silence. Don't do anything. And all of this condition arising mind state, maybe your anger, your desire, your craving, your covetousness, your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, they will all come to pass when you don't give it any more deluded energy through your heedless thinking, through your self-delusion. You can just silent and let things be. That's why I say, be with it, at peace with it. Then you find out what happened. All condition arising state will actually cease to be. Then you realize this is the real meditation. The original state of mind is already stillness, silent. Before anger arise, there was no anger. Before fear arise, there was no fear. That's why you can trace the origination factor of all this through the Dhammanupassana, third category of practice. Then through this silent mind, you will understand a lot of things. That's why the real meditation is just silent. Don't do anything. Then the fourth way is to apply Dhammanupassana. The six internal sense bases and six external sense bases, is it? So that you can trace the origination factor of the unwholesome thought, whether it's anger, fear, or whatever. It comes through one of your senses. So when you cultivate the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases, you will become very clear. And you will understand how the form and mind become like that. How it's conditioned in the negativity, fear, worry, anxiety. Then when you understand how it comes to be, how the unarisen hindrance come to be, how the unarisen defilement come to be, you will know how to develop the wisdom to retrospectively reverse it. So that in future when you confront the same sense experience, you would have straightened your view not to react and develop all this wrong view or self-delusion. So that you won't get yourself entangled with all this delusion that can condition your misery, your suffering. And this is what wisdom is all about. It's like the five way to overcome defilement or wrong thought, wrong speech and wrong action. They are actually the meditation. But people cannot explain because they have not developed the actual cultivation. Then the last one is the Buddha said, if all these four ways that he has taught you doesn't work, then you have to be very determined. Means with tongue against your palate, you must determine to actually, through your willpower, to abandon it, to allow it to cease. This is for people who has got no other way out. Initially, you have to determine through your will. That's why when you become very serious, you will be able to develop it. Then you will vow. You will vow seriously to abandon them, to cultivate and all things. Then from there, the Buddha actually continued. He moved on. He said, after you have finished contemplating the feeling in feeling, then again he used the word, you do it ardently, then clearly comprehending and mindful of them. Then after that, having overcome in this world again covetousness and grief, then you move on to cultivate the third foundation, he said. Then they leave, contemplating citta in citta, or consciousness in consciousness, means mind state, content of consciousness. Then again ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful of it, having overcome in this world covetousness and greed. Then they go on to the fourth foundation, which is contemplation of Dhamma. They use mental object, but it is should be Dhamma. So this is a summary of the four foundations. Kaya, Vedana, Chitta, Dhamma. These four foundations. And they are all described at the back. How you contemplate. They are all in the sutta. This one you have to go back and read up a bit. When it comes to Chitta, the Buddha said, you again silence your mind and aware. When the content of consciousness has greed, you must be aware. It means the evil roots are there. When it has the content of anger, aversion, jealousy, envy, you must be aware. Then when it has the content of delusion, self-delusion, ignorance, you must be aware. Then when the consciousness is bright and clear, you must be aware. When the consciousness is with the what they call negative mental states, you must also be aware, like fear, worry, anxiety, all those things. These are part of self-delusion, the evils. Then when you develop all this understanding through the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, you will become very different. Your understanding will become very different. Then you can actually penetrate the Dhamma. You can understand the essential teaching very clearly, and your mind can liberate and you can become free. Especially the last category of practice, the fourth foundation. When it involves mindfulness of all the essential Dhamma, starting from the five hindrances to the five aggregates of form and mind. Then the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. Then the seven factors of enlightenment. Then the four noble truths. They are all very essential. And the whole of the four foundation of mindfulness is to be developed in stages. You cannot hurry. Kaya Nupassana is very important, because when you anchor your mind to your kaya, your mind slows down. Understand? When you are aware of your kaya, your bodily activity, like anapanasati, means the breath, they are always within the moment. Understand? So when you are aware without thought, you are within the moment, aware without thought. If you don't anchor it to your kaya, this mind will run. It think ahead. That's why the Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything comes to be. That's how you get entangled. You send your mind all over the places, except the four foundations. And you are hardly aware of what you are doing, then you don't stand a chance. Understand? Well, this is the only way. And throughout the day, you are so heedless, you never do this. You are hardly ever mindful of any of the four foundations. You are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so you never leave. That's why without sati, without awareness, without mindfulness, you are as if dead. Spiritually, you are as if dead. Because you are so heedless. Your mind is constantly thinking, worrying, planning, running all over the places, projecting into the past and future, then condition your fear, worry, anxiety. You don't even have a proper sleep at home. Not even a moment of peace. And such living is heedless, the Buddha said. That's why when you anchor your mind to the Four Foundations, for the first time in your life, you become more peaceful. When you are aware of your breathing, you are so serene and so peaceful. There is no thought. You're just aware. But the trouble with cultivator and meditator is they are so kipo and so busy inside there. They're supposed to train their mind to develop mindfulness of the in and out breath. But what are you doing actually? Even your rising, falling. You are busy trying to meditate with the thought and so on. Note this, note that, rising, falling, then breathing in, or count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, then breathing out. What are you trying to do? You just silence your mind and allow the breathing to go on. That silent, through the silent mind, the awareness will detect. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, the mind aware, means awareness and the breath go as one without thought. And that is the training. Why are you going to verbalize and do all those things? And when you meditate, the mind is so actively meditating. How can you meditate? How can you be silent? That's why you got no space between thought. Then you feel sleepy. Like some of you listening, sitting here also sleepy. I can see one or two those. Then suddenly become alert again. So if I give thought like you, I also doze off. Then how? That's why I have to maintain awareness. But it is not something that you maintain inside and not. It comes as a natural part of you. Because when you cultivate until this sati is a part of you, then there is no effort involved. There is no need to maintain anything when that nature is already aware. That's how you have to develop the understanding. The trouble with living being is before you understand, the thinking mind, the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind, the heedless mind, and that one takes over your life. That one is the one living, not you. Because you are hardly mindful. You are lost in thought, continuously lost in thought, and so heedless. And because you fail to see this, you don't see the danger of it. That's why the true cultivator of the way, they will never go back to that way of living. That way is hell, crazy. One of my teachers told me, the first time I met him, no, he said, where you return your awareness? Luckily I told him, back to the heart. No. Back to the heart, he very precise. No. Which part of the heart? I point to the center, he said, wrong. He said, slightly to the left. But I trusted him because I knew. Then you know what he said? Luckily you say you return your awareness here. You return to your head. This is hell, is it? You know what is hell? Where all the hell beings. How they become hell beings? How you take birth in hell? Apaya bhumi. If you born as animal means what? The very strong evil root is what? Animal is ignorant, is there. The demon is a lot of anger, is there. Peta, a lot of greed, is there. Yeah, very greedy, is there. But the hell being got all the three, and so on. That's why this is hell, because the three evil roots are all there, and so on. Because that thought is egoic. Egoic make you selfish, make you have craving, desire, make you very, very emotional. There's an emotional negativity. Then, deluded. Got a lot of fear, worry, anxiety. That's why the three evil roots are there. That's why when you don't know how to develop the wisdom to use thought, then thought become wrong thought. Every thought you arrive because of your delusion and wrong view, it become wrong thought. And this is really hell. That's why I never leave from your head when you are not enlightened. But human being got no choice. If I don't use my thought, I cannot leave. That's not. Which is very true. But nobody asks you to use your thought all the time. You actually become what they call, you use it so rampantly until you abuse it. Because you cannot understand the purpose of thought. What is the purpose of thought? Yeah? You remember this five aggregate of form and mind? Karmically conditioned out for you to use, understand or not? It's your tool and your vehicle to come to this world. So use it. But you use it wrongly, like the tool, your knife. Instead of using it to help you shape your whatever, shape your whatever fruits, veggie, carving and all those things. You use that knife to cut yourself, harm yourself, hurt yourself and hit out at others. Is that the right way to use that instrument, that tool? It's definitely wrong, isn't it, you know? Because you doesn't know how to make use of that tool. But if you have developed the skill and the training, like just now at home, I was sharing part of it with Brother Gan, he came early, and the sister. I say, you look at the chef, the cook, you know how they cut veggie or not, very fast, never cut their hand on us. But because you never train, once a blue moon you go to the kitchen, ask you to cut chili or so you cut your finger. That's why the mind that is untrained and the mind that is trained is like that. Understand? So if you don't know how to use, then you always cut yourself because the knife, double-edged, understand? You don't know how to use, you will use it wrongly. You don't have wisdom, you don't have understanding. That's why the user of thought is very important. If the user of thought has wisdom, thought becomes right thought, beautiful thought, wholesome thought. Then you become beautiful because no way for power. But when you are deluded, thought becomes wrong thought with all the evil root, then there is no noble evil power. That's why there is misery, there is hell. And you don't know how to live life, you don't cultivate the four foundations, you are hardly aware. You are hardly mindful. You don't even know how to anchor your mind to your kaya, to be with your movement, all action, all activity within the moment without thought. This is to slow down your thinking. This is to give you more moment of peace, more moment of silence, stillness, tranquility, so that your original state of mind, which is not the thinking mind, the heedless, wandering mind, that always project here, project there, react to this, react to that, create all the hindrance, create all the defilement. And this is meditation, but you cannot see. And because you have lived your life that way, so habitual, until you are so heedless for so long, and yet you don't know you are heedless. You still think you are very intellectual, very great. You still think, hey, I got PhD, you know. I got master degree, you know. I'm a graduate, you know. I'm very successful in life, you know. So what? You are not mindful. You are not heedful. You don't have the human quality. One of my teachers used to say, Ajayantra, the Thai monk, you can have all the wealth, everything, but if you don't have mindfulness, you are very poor spiritually. He says, spiritually, you are very, very poor without mindfulness. If you are a monk without anything, when you have mindfulness, you are very wealthy, he says, spiritually. You understand his meaning? Because the mind that is so peaceful, that has this spiritual faculty, especially sati, mindfulness and samadhi and wisdom. It is so contented, so happy, so peaceful, with so much joy, pity. There is this joy inside. There is this understanding inside. There is this love and compassion. There is this tranquility and stillness of mind. All the mind states are so beautiful. That's why they are very wealthy, even though they have renounced the world. They don't own anything. Even the robe was offered to them. They only develop the understanding to use. So wealth doesn't refer to how much you own. It's referred to the quality of mind that you have developed. You have sati, you are very wealthy. Without sati, you are very poor. The Buddha says, without sati, you are heedless. And the heedless are as if, what? Are dead, spiritually dead. That's why you are actually like a dead person. No more spiritual life, no more possibility of enlightenment. You can't even have moment of true peace, understand? You may enjoy life, go and have good food, enjoy the karaoke, go travel, everything. But does that make you peaceful? Maybe you have a lot of happiness. But behind the happiness, there is a lot of suffering, misery, unhappiness. Because you got so much problem. You don't know how to die. You worry about dying. You worry about your possession, your wealth, your loved one. And you are so vulnerable, so fragile. Anything can trigger off misery, suffering in you. So without Dhamma, you are really, really very fragile, very vulnerable to life. And you can just break down despite your wealth and all those things. That's why wisdom is very important. And to develop wisdom, you must have sati. You must be heedful. You must have the four foundation of mindfulness accumulating to the Noble Eightfold Path. You must have right understanding of the Four Noble Truths. That's why the whole of the teaching is still finally the Four Noble Truths. And the Three Turning. So with that, maybe tonight I will end the talk. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You got any question or anything that you want to clarify, then maybe you can. Maybe I just finish off this small part. The first foundation of mindfulness, I didn't go beyond the first three categories of cultivation. You remember I talked about anapanasati? That is to anchor your mind so that you can stabilize your sati, mindfulness. Then when you have stabilized already, you have become ever mindful, use it to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Remember? The four posture in daily life. Then sati sampajana, mindfulness of all activity within the present moment, all action or movement within present moment. That's why the Buddha said, when you are standing, you're aware. Looking forward, you're aware. Bending, stretching, turning, you're aware. Putting on the shoulder cloth, wearing your dresses or whatever, you're aware. Taking bath, you're aware. Answering just call, you're aware. Everything you do, you're aware. Aware means what? Attentive, mindful. Do not allow the thought to proliferate, to project and do all sorts of funny things. You are ever mindful of what is going on. A heedless person is heedlessly lost in thought. They are hardly mindful of what is going on in life. Contemplation is different. Contemplation is you are ever mindful of the thought that arises for you to develop the understanding when you are contemplating. You are not heedlessly thinking, lost in thought. Human beings' problem is as they become angry, unhappy, deluded with problem, they act out of fear, worry, anxiety without them knowing it. They are just lost in thought, completely entangle in it, because they are within the field of thought. A thought-based meditation is like that. When you are in the thought-based meditation, you are actually part of the thought. So how can you come out of it? How can you see what is going on? Where you yourself is like trapped in thought, possessed by thought. And everything you do, you use thought. Whereas mindfulness is just awareness before the knowing. There's no thought. If you can't even understand what sati is, how can you do the four foundation of mindfulness? Asana. You're supposed to stay silent and aware before the knowing. Then all this become clear to you. But if you don't get that definition right, you think mindfulness is to know, to be, like they say, watch. Who is watching? If the thought is watching, then that is not sati. It's the silent mind that is silent that can understand. And that is the real cultivation. That's why no amount of sitting can make you wise or develop this four foundation if you don't understand what sati is. And if you understand, I tell you, you progress so fast. So many Kayana Mitta has progressed so fast. And they can be fully aware throughout the day with hardly any thought, little or no thought. Why is this possible? They are not in concentration or samatha meditation. they don't hold on to any jhana or concentration or absorption. They are just in their normal state of awareness, but fully aware most of the time, because they have reversed the way they live life. They have developed the understanding of what siddhi is, mindfulness is, and it's so simple. Nothing magical and difficult. Okay? So after you finish the first three, the fourth one is what? The fourth category of cultivation. Mindfulness of the four elements. Understand not? That's why you reflect and contemplate on the four elements. Then you realize this body is only element, no knowing. Can never be you. And this four element is to distinguish between the four primary, what they call, way of defining form or matter. That's why you have the earth element part of it, the solidity part. Then you have the water element, apo. Then you have the heat element, tejo. Understand? The bodily temperature. That's why without consciousness, this body, first thing is become cold. Then the last one is wind element, vayu. That's why you have your breathing, your breath, your pulse of life, the heartbeat, the vibration that goes through. That's why you can detect your heartbeat, your vibration within your entire body. That night, Sister Kwan said, how come my body vibrate? She thought very great, all the while vibrating, but never aware, only that moment. So there is nothing to be surprised, because we are actually what they call a gregarious being. You know what is a gregarious being? That think a lot and have need companion, understand? Gregarious. Then we are a creature of thought. I like that word. When I was in Form 6, I wrote that essay. My teacher put one rather deeply thought out. I say, living being is a creature of thought. No, when I was in Form 6 or Lower 6, my teacher read a panic. But he knew. He said, this guy is ahead of himself. He said, very, rather deeply thought out. Yeah. I say, the human being, the living being, is a creature of thought, a gregarious being. We think a lot, understand? Hardly silent, hardly mindful. So when you cannot understand all this, you don't know how to contemplate, you don't know how to silence. But there is more than one way to live life, understand? Thought is not the only instrument. Your mind can be peaceful and silent and still. Why are you not getting them? Why are you finding it so elusive to become peaceful? Because you never train the mind, like the chef, can cut so fast, yet don't cut their head, because they are so skillful. So if you are very skillful, like I explained to you in the Thursday class meditation, the mind that is trained, the mind listen to you, understand? You want it to be silent, it's silent. You want it to be aware, it's aware. You want it to do anything, it's under your command. And that is how you train that mundane mind, that thinking mind. Then you become fully aware, where you anchor it to the four foundations, and you understand them for what they are. They are conditioned arising, cause of phenomena, no reality. But there is another true mind that is without thought, that is always aware. Stay with that one. That one can make you very wise. That one can allow you to understand, awaken to a lot of things. And that is the one, if connected to the form and mind, will make the form and mind very wise. Then the form and mind is no longer deluded. Then that user, which is that true mind with the wisdom, will know how to use thought to arise the right thought following Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? Can follow on? Never mind, recorded. Can go by and slowly listen. Then after the four elements, the next one is what? The 32 part, remember? Actually, the 32 part, to my understanding, is apart from, they say, the Mahayana like to use this. He say this skin bag. He always described the human body as a skin bag of very, very, what they call, dirty thing. Understand? He say all your pulse, your feces, your whatever, all those mucus, everything. They are all inside there. Your heart, your liver, every part you see, your skeleton. You don't like to see them. But when they are covered with a layer of skin, with the makeup and the what they call ICI. Oh, you see so pretty, you fall in love, then you become emotional, you know. But open up the skin, what do you see? Huh? Actually, the more important message is what? They are made up of parts, understand or not? Like the bulokat. When they come together and perform a function, you become a human being. Is to see the condition arising, cause of phenomena. And this is not you, we are element only. That's why form is form. Then the last category is the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition. Is to let you know that all form and mind, when it's devoid of consciousness, when consciousness leaves this form, that's why the Buddha said, go and contemplate. In the ancient day, you got a channel ground where they throw the dead body. Then you can see them decaying, the 9 stages. They will go the way of nature. Then you see, that time, you will actually understand the reality of that form, the type of smell that come out of the dead body and dead corpse. You know what my teacher told me, Achayandra? He was with the dead body for 7 years in the cave. He said the human body is the worst. Is it the dead body or the human body? It emits a type of sting that is very difficult to endure. Oh. You're supposed to see how the four elements dissipate. The moment the breath is not there, when consciousness separates, when the form and mind is integrated, you say die. But no one dies, nothing dies. It's just conditions separate. The supporting condition that sustain the human life or living being, they just separate. Then when that thing separate, the consciousness leaves. This form cannot continue because there is no more life force to pump the heart. Then they say dead. The moment is dead, the wind element is gone. Yeah? Remember, no more heartbeat. Then they certify you dead. Next one is what? They touch cold already. No more heat. Then after some time, what happened? The liquid start to ooze out. Understand? Then the earth element start to collapse. Then after that, dry up. Even the bones, everything. Then gone with the wind. What happened? From earth to earth. Understand? Element to element. Understand? That's why you don't exist. Nothing exists. Everything is just condition arising, causal phenomena. When the four elements disperse, the whole of the human body is gone. Even before that, when consciousness separates, the entity is gone. You lost your identity when your breath stops. You don't own anything. When you lose your identity, how can that lost identity own anything? I don't know. You become inheritance. You have a will, then maybe they will allocate accordingly. Otherwise, they say, the nature's law, the society's law decides. And sometimes you're not careful, you convert to certain religion. You got will also no use. They say all belong to that religion. Suddenly, nobody can inherit except that descendant of that religion. And you don't have anybody, then it go to their possession. So life is just the way it is. If you understand, you have wisdom, you know how to live. If you don't understand, you are deluded, you have a lot of suffering, and you will go through a lot of misery, a lot of unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety. Okay, now maybe I can stop. And I thank you for your patience. Huh? Then you can ask questions if you have any. Yeah, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah. Where's the mic? Oh, you see, Brother Tay. Anybody wants to ask any question or share anything, you can. While I wait, I have a drink.
Yes, any question from the floor? Okay.
Pass the mic to our brother.
Brother Tay. You see? Sati is the only way to get enlightenment. But during Buddha's times, there were many lay persons just by listening, get enlightened. They are not meditating. But how come they can?
Yeah, very good. Now my chewy is okay. It's a very good question. Thank you for your question. You see, the world is very funny. Normally, living being look at what? Look at what is happening now, the present moment, the form. That's why nature's law, if you don't have the understanding, even law of karma, you will ask, it's so unfair, this world. If I have, they used to blame the mother. If I had a mother who can marry somebody like Bill Gates, my life would have been different. Why so unfair? Why I have to take birth there? But you don't know how much parami that person, like Ananda Pindika, then this life may be Ananda Krishna. Then you look at Bill Gates, Melinda and him. How come they are so wealthy? You mean only this life? They are so lucky, they went into IT, then they became so successful. They have done a lot of hard work in the past. Like Bill Gates, this life after he makes so much money, what did he do? He set up the foundation with the wife to do charity. Donated 90% of their wealth and keep on doing charity. This parami is the parami that brings back wealth. Even Warren Buffett donated 60%. Vincent Tan, I don't know how many percent, also donated. That's why they come with this parami. And you think during that time, the lay people, there was one very good one. I like this guy, Chitta. He is one of the wisest among the lay people. He was already an anagami at that time. His wisdom is so high. And you know how all these are possible. Like Kondanya. How come during the first sermon of the five ascetics, he is the first one to become Sotapan? Why the other four, nothing happened? Because during the early past, when Sakyamuni Buddha as a Bodhisattva was cultivating the virtue of patience, the perfection of patience, that time Kondanya was the king. He went hunting somewhere, then as he went hunting, the wife and the concubine all, they stay back and have their activity. Then suddenly they met this hermit with very long hair, everything. And there was actually Bodhisattva at that time, Sakyamuni. He was cultivating patience, but he was such a great being with such great character and pleasantness, although his form was very frightening. But he got such wisdom, love and compassion and so much patience. That's why when suddenly one or two of the ladies start to talk to him, they find him so different. Then they lie. Then the word spread. Then everybody go. Then end of the day, almost all the concubine and the king's lady are there. Then when the king came back from hunting, he realized all the women missing. He asked around. Oh, this is listening to one of the hermit talking about patience. Oh, then this king later on become Kondanya. He was very unhappy, so he wanted to go and test this so-called hermit or yogi who claimed to be very patient. Then he went there. Then he announced his arrival. Then he talked directly to Sakyamuni, that time the Bodhisattva. He said, I understand you are cultivating patience. He said, I want to test you, he said. See whether you're really patient or not. Then he said, the Bodhisattva said, no problem, you go ahead. You seriously want me to do it or not? He said, you know what I'm going to do to you? I'm going to cut off your four limbs. The Bodhisattva smiled. Thank you, he said, thank you so much. He said, that is what I need, he said. You go ahead, he said. Oh, the king also actually panicked. Then finally he did it. Then he told the king, you don't worry, he said. because I have faith in my cultivation, he said. If I have not developed the understanding of this parami, he said, the four limbs will not come back to me, he said. But because of my understanding and that parami, and I have, he has actually made the aspiration. He said, the four limbs will come back to me. So the king actually severed off all the four limbs. I think that time they used the horses. And really, you know, after that, without limbs, still smiling there. Then suddenly he just invoked the power of truth. He said, by the power of this truth, this part of me, may my limbs come back to me. Zoom, all the four limbs came back. The king panicked. Straight away came down on the horse and bowed and paid respect and asked for forgiveness. The Bodhisattva at that time said, don't worry, he said. You have done nothing wrong. He said. You only want to test me. And you have done well. He said, in the future, he said, you will be the first one that I will take across. When this nature becomes the Sammasambuddha. Because of that promise, the condition, there's a kandanya. Straight away became a Sotapanna. All this has this condition and parami. You think they just listen enlightened, like Hui Ning, woodcutter, illiterate thing. You're so educated. Why I read to you the Diamond Sutta, the mind must have no dwelling. Anybody enlightened? No? When he come to that stanza, he straight away enlightened. No? When he said the mind must have no dwelling, but he was born without a mundane mind, and the mind never dwelt anywhere. That's why he realized that it's the enlightened state. That's why he became full of joy. Oh. And his mind is really like that. That's why when he went to the fifth patriarch, upon arrival, people thought he very arrogant. The fifth patriarch with the recommendation letter shown to him, then he know that this person recommended by one of the devotees. Then he asked, what's your name? Where are you from? And why do you come? Hui Ning, you know how he replied. No? He said, I'm from the south. My name is Hui Ning. I came here to seek Buddhahood. Nothing less than Buddhahood. Oh, you received such a disciple, you also panic. And why he knew what he wanted? It's because his past, he has cultivated. Their parami is not that. So that's why I don't expect God chance. Wow, I'm very lucky. Suddenly I listen, no need meditate. Straight away become enlightened. You remember? During one of the Jatakataka story, one of the king's wife, together with all the lady that follow her on, they went and listened to the Buddha. Then finally they die of fire, you remember? Die of fire. But they all become anagami, you know. Third stage of sainthood before they die. How come so easy? Lay people listen, you know. You have been listening for how long? Because they have done a lot of hard work in the past. Understand? It's their parami. Like Hui Ning, already born without the mundane mind. That's why he's fully aware inside. Understand? And you think he got no awareness just because he woodcutter, he literate. But he already without the mundane mind, that's why he is fully aware. That's why when the Diamond Sutta mentioned the mind must have no dwelling, he straight away awakened because he don't have that mind that dwell on something. Understand that? His mind is the true mind. It doesn't dwell on anything. That mind understand what is going on. Understand that? So this is how when you develop the cultivation yourself, when you have this ability to come into contact with your true nature, your true mind, and you understand all this. Before you understand, you use your thought. You cannot understand things that is beyond thought. It's like that kid in the primary school. You tell them, hey, mathematics or arithmetic is not what you think. To them, it's addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Understand not? Nothing else. You say, no. You go higher, got additional maths, got differential equation, got calculus, got Fourier series. He say, you crazy. My teacher never teach like that one. No such thing. You wrong. Big, very big, what they call view. You wrong. That's why Theravada cannot understand Mahayana, no such teaching wrong. you cannot understand. At least have an open mind. Not until you investigate into everything and develop the understanding. If your understanding is still limited, please have an open mind. But the moment you transform, you understand, then you have this understanding, then you will understand why living beings are like that. Why people are just the way they are. And you will have that type of nature which is very different. Okay? I hope I answered your question. Anybody else? Ah, yes. Ah, very good. Pass the mic.
Quite relevant to what you have just said.
Yeah.
I recently met Korean nun when I was in Melbourne. Before I went over to Melbourne, I was supposed to get a gift for a Buddhist friend in Melbourne. And this Buddhist friend says, "No, Joyce, don't bother. Just come with your daughter. We are quite happy to accommodate you, or you know, take you around." I said, "Okay, fine." But I did bring some presents with me when I was there. But I was looking around for something and for someone else. And this same friend told me that after 2 days, he says, "Hey, Joyce, since you are going to buy me something, can you actually bring it and dana it and offer it to a Korean nun?" I said, "Yeah, sure. No, a Kuan Yin or anything?" I said, "Fine, okay." So I started looking for a Kuan Yin for her. And while I found the other gifts for my other Buddhist friend, I couldn't find a Kuan Yin for her at all. And I was wondering why. I said, "Okay," because it was the last day before I flew off. I said, "Okay, never mind. I think I have quite a few in my house. You know, I'll just see which one is more appropriate." And after some time, and I just said, "Okay, I think it has to be this one. I just take this one, okay?" And I just take it and I ran off with me. And I flew in on Saturday, and Sunday I saw the Korean nun. Actually, she's an Australian by birth, but she's ordained in Korea. She has been a nun for 33 years, and her name is Chikwan Sunim. A very bubbly, I think she's in her 70s, if I'm not mistaken. So I was given an opportunity to pay my respect to her, and I offered her my little gift, which I put it actually in a sash, which you can't see, you know, those little nice stuff. And when she opened it up and she took it out, it was actually a small little Kuan Yin that a friend of mine from Thailand actually gave it to me. And I gave it to this nun. And when she saw this little Buddha, this little Kuan Yin, the expression on her face was probably an expression of shock. And she hold it again and she see it again and then she put it straight to the heart here. And then she was like in such a blissful state. And then she says, "This is exactly the yen." Not meant to be recorded. "See, this is exactly the same one that I broke. I just broke it recently. And I was wondering how am I going to tell my senior monk who gave this to me as a gift. As a gift." Yeah, and she was so... I mean, how coincidence can this be? The little gift was from from Thailand from a Buddhist friend of mine who gave it to me. And I went to Padaling Street and looked for a Kuan Yin image for her. I couldn't find any. And went back home, I looked at my whole house and I just took that particular one, which is really small, which actually I think you can actually find quite easily, probably, in Bangkok. And I took it all the way to Melbourne and to give to just this particular nun, who actually broke it, which is an identical one that I offered her. And it was really awesome. I cannot explain to you how the expression on her face. And she keeps saying that, gosh, how can this be, you know? And she took it out again and she looked at it. You see, the only thing that was really different was just a little bit at the edge of the fringe of the little Kuan Yin. The rest of it looks exactly the same. And she said that the senior monk who gave her this little Kuan Yin, which she hasn't seen for a long time, quite a while, actually sent his disciple to come and pay respect to her on that particular day. And she was like thinking, oh gosh, you know, I broke the Kuan Yin that the senior monk gave me, and today she's sending the disciple to see me. And she said, Joyce, I don't know, this thing, it is like I think she's quite lost over, and so was I. I thought it was very relevant you all say that.
It's very relevant, yeah, very good. Sadhu. You should rejoice. You know why? You see, when you cultivate, this is one part you should know. As you cultivate the Dhamma, when you are on the right path, you will know. You will understand. Everything go your way. Your life like completely different change. Brother Song used to tell me, he said, Brother Teo, you don't believe, he said, now life is so wonderful, so beautiful. Everywhere he go, like everything goes with, especially Kapak, cannot find one also, sure there one. A lot of people tell me Kapak, but not only that, when your nature is different, whatever your thought arise, you remember during the early day, I said, I dare not use that pure wish because it's so potent, so powerful, it causes things to arise. That's why when she has that compassionate thought, when she recalled the master gave her that one and it was broken, of course there is still a little bit of this type of attachment to that thing, but not her attachment because she felt very bad because the teacher gave it to her and she broke it. That's not. So there's a slight one. Then the thought say, how? Of course, it definitely said something like that within the subconscious. If only I can find something that is similar, that would be beautiful. But when she saw that, her heart was touched. And these are possible. Not only that, even my wife was a user to tell me. Things that she have given a thought, the thing just come. That's why sometimes you will come to know, like my son, he received a lot of watches from his parami. Then they know I receive a lot of Chinese tea. Parami. Then my wife receive a lot of other things. Yeah, these are the things that through their conditioning from the past, this is what they actually already developed the interest to have. Then a lot of things will go your way. That's why you want to know whether you're on the right path or not. Yeah? These are very clear message. When your life become much, much better, you are more peaceful, you are more happy, you have less suffering, you have less misery, you have less thought, you have more moment of silent peace, stillness and tranquility. And that is the sign of progress, heedfulness and all those things. When you are no longer like before, so heedless, so easily excitable, so easily panicked, and so gullible, so heedless. You are more and more mindful, aware, attentive, and more determined, more sincere. You have a lot of virtue, goodness, kindness, sincerity, generosity. You are incapable of negativity. That is the real sign of progress. Not when you progress until you become more egoic. Oh, I enlightened, I'm very special, I can do this. That is not the sign. That is the counter sign. You have to be careful, fully aware of what the form and mind is telling you. When you still think that this is you, you are far, far away from enlightenment, I tell you. The Diamond Sutta states it very clearly. Even the Sotapanna will know that this form and mind is not him. They will never have a thought that this is him. Not to say other cultivator. Okay? We better end. Nearly 10:30, 15.
Sadhu, Brother Teo, for your kindness to share with us the your Dharma knowledge. And I believe you have explained quite well. So the other seems to be enlightened, I think, since there's no question. Anyway, as an appreciation, we'd like to for the talk that you have given to us. Brother Gan.
Sadhu. I need to offer this back to him where he provides transport. Sadhu. I rejoice. Anyway, thank you for the offering. Sadhu. I rejoice.
Sadhu.
You all can rejoice. A lot of wholesomeness. Okay.
Before we share the merits, just another announcement. Just now we have mentioned about the CD, that is Maha Satipatthana Sutta chanted in Pali. The CD is to be reproduced 2,000 pieces, 1,360 ringgit. So for those of you who would like to participate in this good deed, you may contribute towards it. And also, just pre-information, we have not officially announced it. It's quite likely that we'll be holding a Sangika Dana on the 19th of April. That means next Sunday, just to let you know. Okay? We may hold a Sangika Dana for all. Actually, it is in conjunction with this Cheng Beng Festival. But because Reverend Sada was not able to come, alright, in time, so we have to delay it. But fearing that the traditional Chinese who may be superstitious, so they may not like the idea that to hold a Cheng Beng festival or occasion outside of the so-called 10-day period. They may not be happy with it. So we are not going to say that it is Cheng Beng occasion. We are just going to hold it as a Sangika Dana. But with Dharma knowledge that we have, we know. You can say it as every day is also Cheng Beng, or every day is what you call that Chigge Puan, meaning that to us Buddhists, every day is the same. But for the Chinese, due to their lack of understanding, they may be very particular and they may not like it that it is done Cheng Beng out of the so-called accepted period. But this is to let you know so that you can arrange, prepare yourself for the Sangika Dana on the 19th, that's next Sunday. Okay? We'll send out another email to confirm it. Alright? So, Brother Teo, lead us in the sharing of merits.
Okay. You compose your mind, develop the faith, sada, virya. Then be mindful and rejoice in all the wholesomeness that you have partake. You have actually developed the wholesome mind by listening attentively to the Dhamma sharing. Then through that process, you straighten your view. Then now we are going to share merits, transfer merits. Then you have paid respect to Triple Gem. You have developed the reverential salutation, renew your precepts. Then you have radiant love and metta. So all these are very wholesome. So we will invoke the power of merits. By the power of these merits may be shared with all beings, especially devas. We will start sharing merits with all the devas. We will chant the Pali. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Buddha, Kuan Yin, Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.